You're probably tired of hearing about the pandemic.
The lady who has attacked has been a citizen for 25 years.
And the barrage of news reports on the racism that followed.
Racism and xenophobia.
A man used racial slurs and kicked a 55-year-old woman.
Inter-ethnic couple being confronted by a man.
Racism still exists in Singapore. It's among us, in our streets, our neighborhoods, and our workplaces.
But let me tell you why you have to listen. The police have reported a worrying trend. In 2020, as compared to the year before, they've had to investigate double the number of racist acts.
These cases include those that occur online as well as those in the physical world. And this spike comes after a backdrop of rising cases since 2017. After investigation, some of these perpetrators were issued a warning. Between 2019 and 2020, such warnings went up from 14 to 23 cases. I wrote in to the Singapore Police Force to find out why. They revealed there were more clashes related to COVID-19, especially between neighbours. How did race so quickly become a trigger point in these times of stress?
I'm John Puthucherry, chairman of OnePeople.sg. I've spent a good part of my working life trying to understand how a diverse society like ours can cope with racial differences.
I've come to realize racism doesn't just feel unfair, it affects lives. So I'm making this two-part documentary to confront how much racial bias has cost us.
We can see a certain overrepresentation of the Malay community in the gig economy. Two that comes to mind is the private hire drivers and also the food delivery riders.
Through social experiments, backed by actual studies,
we have first-hand experimental evidence for racism.
I'm a bit disappointed that it turned out like this.
I will also find out how it's in our nature to have prejudices.
Most people maybe don't have this insight that they have implicit bias.
I think it's kind of dangerous.
How then can we overcome our biases to make life in Singapore better for all of us, regardless of race?
Our house doors are facing directly towards each other. Hi, I'm Chef Bob. I'm a chef and an accidental social media influencer. And this is my nenek Cina. So she's my lovely neighbor.
During COVID, right, there are more people feel claustrophobic because we are stuck in Singapore and all. And there's a lot of bad vibes and all. There's a lot of fights going on between neighbors.
At the start of the show, I showed you some numbers. Reports on racist acts have doubled in 2020 compared to the year before. So 60 cases were investigated, and I'm worried that this trend may continue, with 31 cases in just the first half of 2021. In light of these disturbing numbers, I want to know if we've really become more racist over the years.
Hello, good morning, sir.
To find out, CNA is working with the Institute of Policy Studies to carry out a nationwide survey on race relations in Singapore. Part of this survey will also dig deep into the two most talked about areas of discrimination, in the workplace and the rental of homes. The last time I did a survey like that was back in 2016. Then we looked at what we really thought about other races and what we considered racist behaviour at a time when we were more reluctant to talk about racism. The results of the survey were widely publicised in news articles. One particular statistic in that survey caught a researcher's attention. In the 2016 survey, 53% indicated that racism is not an important problem in Singapore. Dr. Peter Chu, a senior lecturer in psychology, felt this number was too optimistic. After all, he had read so many anecdotes of workplace discrimination on the internet. So he wanted to prove a point. He recruited 171 participants for a study. His aim? To find out the extent to which race comes into play in a crucial process, hiring.
I've read his paper and the results have me quite concerned, but rather than just tell you, let me show you through a demonstration.
I'm conducting a simulated hiring task where participants are given one resume each to review and then recommend a pay between $2,800 to $3,562. In Peter's version, 171 Chinese Singaporeans did the task. I have just 15 Singaporeans, but I have not just Chinese, but Malays and Indians as well. Here's the catch. The resumes they are asked to review are identical, except for one crucial detail. The name at the top.
This is what I offer to him.
This candidate has the qualification,
capable of doing the job,
and the willingness to learn.
So I'm willing to offer this amount.
I kind of put in somewhere in between the range for a start.
Oh, and I give something very close to the maximum amount.
Chinese, right?
Dr. Chu is helping me tabulate the responses. We calculated the average salary given to those with Chinese names versus those with Malay names.
And that's a very significant difference of almost $270. Was this consistent with the results of your study?
In fact, this was worse than what I found in my study, where we only discovered a difference of about $100, but the direction is the same.
What do you think that implies?
I think what it now shows is that we have first-hand experimental evidence for racism.
I'm a bit disappointed that it turned out like this.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have hoped it wouldn't be quite so stark.
This is the result of my simple social experiment. On average, resumes with Chinese-sounding names were offered $3,352, while resumes with Malay-sounding names were given $3,083. A difference of $269. This adds up to a pay gap of $3,228 in a year. We did not tabulate the average for Indian names, as it's not backed up by Dr. Chu's large-scale study. And there is one more crucial difference in my demonstration. Dr. Chu's study used only Chinese participants to review the resumes. I, on the other hand, got Chinese, Malays, and Indians to take part in the experiment.
So, I've included in my demonstration all races, but you only had Chinese undergraduates in your study. Why did you choose to do that?
Because usually it is the majority groups that holds power, status, and they're the ones making some of the more important decisions, and they could be in the position of power to, let's say, discriminate against someone else.
We had a fairly diverse mix of different races, and yet the finding we had was essentially the same. Shouldn't you expect a difference in the outcome?
This could be an instance of internalized stereotyping.
Explain what you mean by that, internalized stereotyping.
That happens when certain minority groups, they would internalize the views of society about themselves. So, I mean, put simply, for example, if everyone thinks that I'm lazy, therefore I'm lazy. And in that sense, they internalize that stereotype and it shows in the way they rate their fellow Malay candidates, for example.
As it turns out, some of the minorities in my study were also responsible for giving the resumes with Malay names a lower pay.
What effect is that going to have on people and families from the community that's affected?
Well, one clear negative effect will be the household income disparity that we have witnessed so far since the 1980s. Chinese and Indian families had similar levels of household incomes. Mm-hmm. It was really Malays who were lagging when it comes to this particular indicator. So if they are paid on average $269 lesser every month, that could add up over the entire lifetime. And that is on the assumption that they were hired in the first place.
And is it likely to get better or worse on its own?
On its own, I don't think it is going to get any better. Those disparities have been in place since the 1980s. So we will need to intervene and do something about it for it to get better.
I want to know what went through the participants' minds when they assigned the salaries. So I gathered all 15 of them.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
You had a chance to look through the CVs, assign the salaries. In terms of the qualifications, the background and the experience, were exactly the same. There was only one thing that changed across all the CVs.
The name?
The name, that's right. That's right. So the names at the top were different. And there's a little bit of a twist. We use real names. We use your names. We won't tell you who gave you which salary, but these are the salaries that you were given.
Remember the names on the resumes that the participants were rating earlier in the demonstration? They weren't made-up names. They were real names of other people in the same room who also took part in the study. So each person has assigned a salary for another person in the room.
What salary were you offered?
2,800.
So that was the lowest possible. Were you surprised?
Yes, I'm surprised. Because am I not qualified to get a higher salary?
Some of you got much higher offers, right? Yeah? Yeah. What do you think, Joy? What did you get offered?
3.5.
So that's also pretty much the maximum?
Yeah, quite near the maximum.
Basically, both of your CVs are exactly the same. Same work experience, same qualifications. The only thing that's different is the names. So, on average, Chinese names got about $3,352. And on average, the Malay names got $3,083. About $270 difference. What do you think is going on?
Not really surprising, I think. I guess it's something we all kind of know but don't really have the figures to back it up.
Normally, Chinese would like to bargain. So that's why when we put a low salary, definitely they will not accept at all.
The thing is that the competition is a lot and the Malays were actually willing to take any salary that is less. Maybe they do not have high expectation. So in the end, people would think that it's okay to give the Malay a lesser salary because they are willingly to have it.
I mean, even the local companies are talking about, like, mostly are Chinese. So probably they see that majority is Chinese, of course. I mean, under the same race, they will tend to give more salaries. Then if they say this, oh, it's non-Chinese, then they see whether they can eat in the Malay word, makan that up or not.
You think so?
Yes.
I mean, has it happened to yourselves or to people that you know?
Yes, it's happened to myself. Based on my experience, I work in a supermarket as the cashier. So I have a DCEO level qualification, but I'm not sure or why my manager took somebody else with Sec 2 to be a supervisor. So I felt disappointed. So I just been wondering, is it because of race?
You think it will have an effect on the kind of jobs that people apply for and stay in if they're always being offered a lower salary for the same qualification?
And usually the hirers are of an older generation, which do have norms and stereotypes, which may affect their decisions.
But today, our group is quite young and quite diversified.
Yeah.
And yet we still had a $270 gap. Sometimes you think, well, it's because of the older people or the people of the other race or the people of like this, people like that. But actually, in the experiment today, it's all of us together that did the same thing. You know?
If we look at the data collected for our census, the proportion of the Malay working population earning below $4,000 is 61%. For Chinese, it is 41% of the Chinese working population. And similarly for Indians, at 42% of the Indian working population. Peter Chu's study had another dimension. He used resumes of different strengths. Now, this is a strong resume, and it's an excellent candidate, high GPA, president of the club. Peter then assigned names of different races to identical resumes and asked people to assign a salary for the job. The hope was that with these undeniably good qualifications, people would look past the race, the name, and assign the same good salary for the candidate. But the bias remained, no matter the strength of the resume. Those with Malay names still got assigned lower salaries than those with Chinese names. It seems like the level of achievement isn't a factor in whether someone with a Malay name will be discriminated against at the workplace.
I feel like as minorities, we have to work twice as hard. Yeah, we have to constantly prove ourselves.
I think from the first time I entered school, it started with other people your own age, your own size, telling you you smell different, you look different, although you are wearing uniform and you are clean. And, you know, that's how it all started. And then as you transition into the adult working life, where you would think people would have grown more mature, is just right smack in your face all the time. My lecturer had actually fixed for a classmate back then and me to go to this jewelry shop in a very expensive shopping mall and say that this is where your internship will be at. So the two of us went in for the, you know, formal, like, hi, bye, we're here. And they're like, okay, we'll call you back. He's a Singaporean Chinese man, and then there is me, a Singaporean Indian girl. They had called Melvin, and they told Melvin what time to report. So Melvin asked them, is Kavi coming at the same time too? And they're like, no, Kavi is not getting that internship slot because she cannot speak Mandarin. And this was jewelry designing. Why do I need to speak Mandarin for jewelry designing? I have a basic cert in, like, speaking Mandarin too, you know. But I don't think they're really looking for the Mandarin speaking asset per se. I think they're really looking for specifically Singaporean Chinese.
We have heard that this does happen. Minorities who lose out at the workplace because of their race. And in this show, so far, we've seen experimental evidence that it doesn't just feel unfair, it can have an impact on how much they earn and in turn affect how they lead their lives. I want to find out how the Malay community views this. I speak to Mohsin Rashid, Executive Director of the Association of Muslim Professionals. And I am bringing him the results of the study done in 2019 by a researcher who wanted to find out how racial discrimination impacts hiring. He gave 171 participants one resume each. All the resumes were identical except for the names. Now, the resumes that had a Chinese name, on average, were offered about $3,000 as a starting salary. The resumes that had a Malay name were offered, on average, $100 less. Is this something that you see happening on the ground?
That is not entirely surprising. The conversations I've had with people who are looking for employment and so on, it cuts across from hiring to workplace discrimination. If there are hiring practices or discriminatory hiring practices at the start, I would think that throughout the career journey, there could be discriminatory practices that could slow career progression.
The researcher for the experiment thinks that this accounts for the difference in the household income for the Malay community compared to the other communities. Do you think it is so?
I think it's one factor, but definitely a significant one, I would say.
If you have this regular discrimination around hiring practices. What happens when a young job seeker encounters this? What are they driven to do?
The natural tendency is to look at employment whereby they are more accepted. And currently, we can see a certain overrepresentation of the Malay community in the gig economy. Two that comes to mind is the private hire drivers and also the food delivery riders.
Is that something that you're concerned about?
There is an immediate gratification in terms of the salary in the short term, but I think there is limited career growth and progression, and I think that definitely in the long term has an impact.
What would be the impact on the community as a result of this salary discrepancy?
When we are graded a little lower, or even anything lower than the national average, when we look at comparisons between communities, right? The questions that we ask ourselves, is it really that we are less talented or with a certain less skill to match with the broader society?
CNA, together with the Institute of Policy Studies, has commissioned a survey to look into the state of race relations in Singapore.
We asked you if you had been paid less than your peers of similar ability or rank because of your race. 20% of Malay respondents said yes, compared with 13% of Indian respondents saying yes, and only 5% of Chinese respondents said yes. When it came to career prospects, we asked you if you'd lost out on a job because of your race, or a promotion, or an opportunity at work. About 5% of Chinese respondents said yes. There was a stark difference with the Malay and Indian respondents, where about 20% of them agreed with the statement. There is another area that we dive deep into: rental. For those who have tried to rent a place before, 3% of Chinese respondents have been rejected as a tenant. That rises to 8% for Malay respondents. For Indian respondents, that almost triples to 23%. To get behind this statistic, I've arranged to go for a drive with someone who's faced this discrimination. Hi, Darius.
Hello.
How are you?
Good
hey,
to see
thanks
you.
Thanks for doing this. Thanks.
No problem.
Darius Chung is married to an Indian.
It was actually 6 years ago. My wife was pregnant and we thought we wanted to move closer to her office.
He is showing me where he and his wife were looking for a place to rent in the heart of the city.
I was already pre-negotiating the prices with the agents based on just the photos. We liked the unit so much, it was so much closer to her office, we were willing to pay a premium. We went to view, we turned up both together, and then the agent told us that, you know, our profile were not suitable. The landlord would not accept Indians.
When they find out that your wife is Indian, they change their tune.
Exactly. I actually offered to pay on top of that. I said, hey, would the landlord change his mind if I just top up another $200 in rent? And the answer is no.
Wow.
What's interesting to me is this. Darius is actually the co-founder of 99.co, one of the largest property portals featuring thousands of listings for rent. And yet, he couldn't find a home he really wanted.
Hi, Roshni.
In the end, the couple had to settle for a unit that was smaller and much further away from their offices. The uncomfortable truth was that no amount of financial capability could offset the fact that his wife was simply Indian. I had to hear from her.
You're capable, confident, and competent, and you're having such difficulties.
It made me question, am I really a Singaporean?
So at that time, she placed her altar in front of the house. When she went to place the altar, she come to me and asked for my permission to place an altar in front of her house. Where can you get anybody like that?
Okay.
Other people might not be more tolerant to the smoke, but for me, because I'm a chef, I'm more exposed to all these different kinds of smell. I do a lot of heavy cooking in my kitchen where I cook rendang during Hari Raya and I do barbecue. But, you know, the smoke is much more than her incense. So, I mean, it's a two-way situation that we tolerate each other.
你有煮吗？你不知道啊？我不知道你有。你不知道啊？我没有闻到有味道。
No, I need to cook more like that.
我没有闻到。
During Chinese New Year and then during the Tang Yuan Festival, right, she always pray in front of my house. So one day, I decided to put up a TikTok video of my nenek Cina during Chinese New Year that she pray in front of my house.
Tia, ada apa? Cak Gomei?
Cina, sembahyang Tang Yuan.
That video went viral. I end the video with, Why ni ante? Okay, that's when the story of Nenek Cina and Chef Bob started lah.
Darius and Roshni are a pair of married entrepreneurs who have come to terms with the fact that success in their careers doesn't stop them from facing rental discrimination. So Darius was telling us about the difficulties that you had when renting.
It was very hurtful, and they'd have one look at me and they're like, what race is your wife? And he'd be like, she's Singaporean. And they're like, no, we don't think so. Can you give us your passport? And so they verified that I was from Singapore and that my race was Indian, and they still rejected me.
So they sort of ignored your nationality and only saw your race?
Absolutely.
That must have hurt pretty bad.
And I looked at him and I said, I'm so sorry that we're having such difficulties because I'm Indian. And he looked at me and he hugged me and he says, I never want you to apologize for your race. If anything, I'm sorry about the fact that we're making you feel this way. It's not okay. It's not all right, and we're going to change this.
We need to try our best to make sure this doesn't happen.
So we have a daughter, and when she was born, we had to decide what race we were going to put on her national ID. And I said, maybe we should not include Indian, because I may not want my daughter to experience the same setbacks that I've experienced. I didn't want to deprive my next generation of the opportunities. So we contemplated whether it would just make it an easier life for her if we just left it as Chinese.
But what did you do then?
We went with a double barrel at the end. So we went with Chinese-Indian.
Why did you decide to include Indian in your child's race in the end?
At the end of the day, we don't want to strip away her identity. I don't want her to forget that she is Indian.
That happened in 2016. Darius wrote a blog post that went viral. But that aside, Darius, as the co-founder of 99.co, immediately set out to do something about it.
OK, so let me just try out this diversity filter of yours, OK? So if I go for the location currently...
You can go to filter and you can find diversity-friendly.
In the 99.co interface, he added a filter tag called Diversity Friendly. A landlord or agent can choose to add this tag if they want to openly indicate that they will not discriminate on the basis of race. This will increase their potential pool of tenants beyond those of the majority race.
As an individual renting for yourself, yeah. Why couldn't you make the system work for yourself 5 years ago when you were trying to rent?
Many of these landlords are essentially discriminatory 1/3 of the time. So it's very hard to avoid them because given a certain budget, given a certain location, certain requirements, you don't have that many choices. You know, come down to top 5, 10 choices, inevitably you're going to run into some of these discriminatory listings.
Do you ever wish that you could just ban them or kick them off the platform?
If you say that we'll kick off the landlord's listing, then the question would be, do we actually have the right to do so? Because the law says that the private property owner has the rights to rent to whoever they want, right? The ironic thing is this. We actually don't believe the landlords are really racist by nature. Race is a factor they've taken as a proxy or something that they actually don't want. As an example, right, the urban myth is that Indians cook curry. What they should do is say, well, say no cooking. And that's a much, much more acceptable thing to do. If you want to cook, sure, pay $1,000 more, whatever, right? Then you can clean up, do a deep cleaning. It's solvable. It's an economic question. I think that's fair.
I see.
We did ask in our survey what factors would make you reconsider renting to someone you did not select as your preferred race. 41% said they will reconsider if regular inspections are allowed. 35% are okay if the tenants are not noisy. 34% are adamant that nothing would change their minds. These may just seem like personal preferences, but for Darius and his wife, it meant resigning themselves to having limited choices on the rental market. And in the workplace, for the Malay community, it could mean less income and even a worrying shift to gig work. What I've learned is that these racial preferences can hurt not just our feelings, but also our lives and our livelihoods, which is why there are guidelines enforced by various bodies to prevent all this. The Council for Estate Agencies ensures that rental ads do not contain such racist remarks. For the workplace, we have the Tripartite Alliance for Fair and Progressive Employment Practices, also known as TAFEP. And in 2021, it was announced that TAFEP's fair employment guidelines would become law. And this will give TAFEP legal teeth to go after companies that do this. It can be tempting to leave it to the law, the authorities, and government to work things out. But what if I told you it's in our nature for every one of us to be racially biased? I'm going to conduct a test on some Singaporeans, and I've invited the least racist people I can think of to try the test.
Nine years.
So at that time, she placed her altar in front of the house. So I mean, I'm okay with the altar. So one day, I decided to put up a post on being tolerant towards our Chinese neighbours, of being tolerant towards the Hungry Ghost Festival. And unfortunately, I got more backlash from my community. I decided to put up a post on being tolerant towards our Chinese neighbours, to be more tolerant towards their burning of incense, burning of hell notes and all. There's one comment that says that in Malay, this fat, bald fella, like real only, he want to like curry favour the Chinese, go ahead lah, but don't bring us in. So I was sad lah, babe.
Interracial couple Marina and Leon have been married for 5 years. Interracial friends Danish and Shuyi are proudly Gen Z, a very woke pair by their own admission.
Okay. So it's a complete reversal.
But then, is
and you may be no stranger to Harish and Terence.
Today's video is about casual racism.
Remember when these skit videos were hot on YouTube?
There's a mistake. Our job posting say Chinese speaker only.
The duo have since moved on to podcasting and have spoken often about race and racism. I'm getting all three pairs to take part in a social experiment.
Okay, so we have this mystery box.
Mystery box, huh?
Okay, I see some cards that have some instructions. This exercise is an adaptation of the implicit association test, widely used in social psychology research, and can be used to detect implicit bias.
The implicit association test is supposed to reveal your implicit bias for one group over another. In this case, Chinese versus Indian.
As fast as you can.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go! Nervous.
This is how it works. You first have to sort faces by race.
Yes!
8.8 seconds.
Okay.
And then you have to sort words into two categories, positive and negative.
18.4.
And the interesting part comes next.
Now mix up both the deck of words and deck of faces. Please time yourself as you sort the words in the two categories at once.
You have to sort both faces and words at the same time. It is randomly assigned which race gets to be paired with positive words and which race is paired with negative words.
So we have Chinese and negative on one side and Indian and positive on the other.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go!
Yes.
35.8.
Switch around one pair of categories. I think it's the same exercise, it's just that now we switch Indian negative and Chinese positive.
Shuffled. And in the final round, the race that was paired with negative words is now paired with positive words, and vice versa.
The Indian and Chinese.
3, 2, 1, go!
The researchers behind this test predict that you will find it instinctively easier to do it one way round versus the other.
Cannot function, cannot function.
Okay, so 30.1.
So looking at your scores, 35.8 for the first round, 30.1. So you're 5.7 seconds faster at sorting all the cards when it was Chinese together with positive.
Yeah.
Why?
It's not just Terence who found it easier to pair Chinese faces with positive words. The other pairs of participants, who are not Indian, tried out a version of the test using Chinese versus non-Chinese tags. Some, like Leon, instinctively placed Chinese faces with the positive words, even though they should have been with negative words for that round.
Well, you have placed the Chinese-looking people in the non-Chinese.
Huh? Chinese faces, you all look positive to me.
Hey.
Danish and Shiyu found themselves much slower when they had to match non-Chinese faces with positive words.
So when we associated positive with non-Chinese, it was slower by about 10 plus seconds, which is, which is not a good thing.
Yes, not exactly. I think it's hard to classify them together.
As a minority myself, I do not expect myself to be doing this badly. Do you think I have a bias?
I don't think so.
I don't think I have a bias either.
I don't think I'm biased. Am I?
Well, the test seems to suggest otherwise. 4 out of 6 participants were slower at sorting non-Chinese faces with positive words.
Just having more experiences with my own race made it easier for me to visualize, okay, positive memories and positive words. Of course, it's not saying that my experiences with Indian culture are negative at all.
I invited you to my house for Deepavali.
I know, exactly. And I know you how many years, and this was the first time you invited me to Deepavali.
Hey, right? Don't play that card. I don't play that card.
No, not in this form. Not in this
Hi, guys.
Hey, hello.
How are you?
How are you?
Good to see you.
So you've done the test.
We have.
Yes.
What did you think of it?
Wasn't expecting there to be such a big difference.
I assume you guys don't think you're racist, right?
I mean, I would say I have racial bias. Does that make me a racist? If I'm on record, yeah, I do not want to be a racist.
But how do you have that comfort to say you have racial biases, but you're not a racist?
I can catch myself thinking of a certain stereotype when I hear of or think of a certain race. So that's where I'm like, oh, I got to watch that. And I hope that's also something that everybody experiences. I feel it's better we acknowledge everybody has something and we think about how to keep everything at bay or educate people how to deal with those sort of emotions.
So what do you think happens then if most people maybe don't have this insight that they have implicit bias, but it's there?
I think it's kind of dangerous. So if there are ways for us to, you know, change how we think or even train ourselves, like, you know, with little exercises like this.
Is that there should be a yearly racial test, like together with your IPPT.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah. You got gold, silver, bronze and all. Maybe you're bronze. You can only eat at restaurants that serve food that is not your culture.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Researchers believe much of this bias takes place in our subconscious. And so they call this effect implicit bias. It is the controversial idea that we may act on stereotypes and be unaware of it. Why does this happen? Our brains have evolved to help us survive in the wild. We form patterns and associations to help us make sense of the world. For example, the dark is dangerous. These help us to make snap judgments when we're threatened or in danger. Mr. Wee, what's the first thing that you think about if I say tattoos?
Gangster.
It's not just him, we're all susceptible to this. What happens in our brain when we are faced with these associations? A team from the National University of Singapore took MRI scans of people as they look at two sets of word pairs, flower and pleasant, insect and unpleasant, two associations that most of us will agree with. Through their scans, we get to see exactly what happens in the brain. When the subjects of the study had to deal with two concepts that were well associated with each other, like flower and pleasant, the MRI showed activity in the left prefrontal cortex. But when the subjects had to deal with two ideas that were not easily associated, like insect and pleasant, something I can't imagine anybody would think of, much more of the left prefrontal cortex lit up, as well as other parts of the brain. Our brains have to work harder to overcome and inhibit these natural and easily formed associations. Now, imagine this biological process when there are deeply ingrained racial stereotypes. So earlier in this social experiment, where I got participants to pair Chinese faces with either positive or negative words, many of them already had associations that Chinese faces should go with positive words. So they were instinctively faster when pairing Chinese faces with positive words. And research by the Nanyang Technological University revealed that these racial preferences can start pretty early, as young as 3 years old. Even here in Singapore, where children grow up in multiracial neighborhoods. And it appears we are quite unaware of it. In the last survey we conducted in 2016, 74% of respondents said that they were hardly or not racist at all. This time, 84% consider themselves hardly or not racist. But compare this to the statistics from the police that I showed you earlier. In 2020, we were seeing more than double the number of reported cases for racist acts compared to 2016, and more than five times the number of cases that received warnings compared to 2016. This could mean we may be harboring implicit racial biases that we aren't aware of. And if it's in our nature to be biased, what do we do about it? Dr. Calvin Lai is part of Project Implicit, a group started to educate the public about bias. He is based in the United States.
We have run tests of implicit bias around the globe in over 36 different countries. So we have a sense about some of the kind of systematic patterns that we see in societies around the world. So one of the things that we find time and again in many modern societies, people commonly share these values of racial equality, and yet at the same time, they still act in ways that suggest that they are expressing some type of racial preference.
What contributes to the sort of the strength of one's implicit bias?
One of the things I really want to emphasize is that a lot of times, it might not be hatred of one group and strong liking of another group. If you're watching media, you're watching the news, and you're seeing that the people who are powerful are of one particular racial group, what you see in advertising, who the bosses are at work and who are the employees, and all of those things are contributing to strengthening implicit biases.
What can we do about implicit bias? Can it be trained away? Is it just giving people information and education?
The hope at the time, about a decade ago, was that you could train them away. That if you just gave them the right type of persuasive message, these implicit biases could be powerfully changed. But, and this is a big but, these effects don't last. These implicit biases are built up over this kind of lifetime of experience. And so to undo them is going to require more than just a single powerful experience. And so what that means for those of us who are trying to create social change is that it's often going to be pretty slow. And that means maybe either setting our expectations lower in terms of how much we can change. It's much better to think of it of how to structure our systems and our processes and our own procedures to prevent the possibility of implicit bias.
We now know that it's in our nature to be biased. And this could lead us to casual racism, microaggressions, and prejudices. In the next episode, I want to investigate if casual racism has an impact beyond just hurt feelings.
Some comments will be played back to you.
If it gets too uncomfortable,
please let the team know that you'd like to stop.
Ni hao. Hey, it's ni hao, right? Is that how you pronounce it?
What happens when a group of volunteers are subjected to these comments for 7 days? What would I find out when I track their anxiety and emotions?
To be honest, a bit sick and tired lah, you know, sick and tired of these statements repeatedly said to me.
I also find out what it will take to remove the implicit bias. Is it really enough to leave it to computers? Your tool removes that opportunity for human bias, but doesn't it also then remove the opportunity to then learn over time? Or perhaps all it needs is some child's play.
Hi, everyone.
Hi. What do you think about her?
She has brown skin.
She does have brown skin.
So now you're getting children to actively scrutinize people of a different race.
Even now, when I think about that missed opportunity from years ago, all I feel is all this pent-up frustration and anger and injustice, right? But I think it's important not to be angry. Like, yeah, okay, you're angry, so what are you doing about it?
If auntie knew about what's going on online, right, I tell you, she will just brush it off. These people are the OG, original gangsters, right? They are built different, man, I tell you. They will be much more appreciative of each other. No need to say one. This one confirm one. 好色啊